Welcome to Ed Research Matters, the University of Chicago Consortium on Chicago School Research's exclusive podcast series. I'm Jessica Puller, and I'm the Communications Specialist for the Consortium on Chicago School Research. It used to be common practice in high schools to sort students into different curricular tracks based on their academic skills. This practice received a lot of criticism in the 1980s, as researchers found that low-skilled students were often in classes with poor instructional quality and that low-income minority students were overrepresented in these dead-end classes. As a result, a number of districts across the country, especially those in urban areas, decided to end the practice of tracking. However, the results were not necessarily better for anyone, including students with low skills or minority students. In fact, detracking was difficult to implement successfully. Recently, however, the practice of sorting students by ability has experienced a national renaissance. One place we see this today is in high schools, where instead of officially tracking students into different tracks or courses, all students now receive a college preparatory curriculum. Thus, the implications of sorting with a common curriculum are becoming a focus of research. UChicago CCSR studied two policies instituted by the Chicago Public Schools, which provided a natural experiment in skill-based sorting with a common curriculum. One of these policies reduced skill-based sorting, while the other actually increased it. With us to discuss both these policies and their implications is Chicago Nomi. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Education at St. Louis University. Additionally, she's an affiliated researcher here at UChicago CCSR. She's also the lead author on our upcoming policy brief, Skill-Based Sorting in the Era of College Prep for All, Costs and Benefits. Also joining us is co-author Elaine Allensworth, who's the Lewis Sebring Director here at UChicago CCSR. To begin, Elaine, could you please explain to us how skill-based sorting is different from traditional tracking?
Tracking assumes different educational goals for students, college preparatory versus general education versus vocational, while sorting assumes the same basic educational goals.
Chicago, can you talk a little bit about the debate around tracking? Why is it controversial?
We can look at tracking debate in terms of the ideology of equity and excellence, or the tension between the two ideologies. So critics view tracking as a key source of inequality, not only because low-track classrooms have lower expectations than high-track classrooms, but also they receive less rigorous instruction. They are taught by less qualified teachers, and they tend to be more disruptive and so forth. And these low-track classes are often overrepresented by low-income and minority students. So by promoting detracking, we aim to bring more equity. But people are also concerned that detracking would undermine excellence because it would water down instruction, particularly for high-achieving kids, and they wouldn't be challenged enough in detract classrooms. So it is controversial because promoting one practice for one group might hurt other group of students.
So what is the connection with the new movement to use a Common Core curriculum?
Under the Common Core, schools are aiming to prepare all students for college. Some schools may respond by ending remedial classes and putting all students in the same college preparatory classes. If they do that, there's going to be less sorting by ability in schools, and that's going to have implications for student achievement.
What were the policies you studied in Chicago?
In 1997, Chicago decided to require all students to enter high school taking a college preparatory curriculum. To do that, they ended remedial classes, and all ninth graders started the math sequence in Algebra 1. As a result, Algebra 1 classes became much more heterogeneous in terms of students entering math skills. 6 years later, they decided that many students needed support to handle Algebra 1, so they introduced a new policy that said students entering high school with math scores below the national median, the 50th percentile, needed to take two periods of algebra, a regular algebra class and a support class. As a result, most schools responded by splitting students into different math classes based on their entering math skills. So that policy introduced skill-based sorting. It basically had the opposite effect of the first policy.
What questions did this research attempt to address?
We actually conducted a number of different studies, both of the College Prep for All policy and of the double-dose algebra policy. And, you know, in those studies, we really were just looking to see what was the effect of the policy. But as we were studying that, we noticed that the way that schools sorted students really seemed to have a large effect on students' achievement. And so what I'm going to talk about now is what we saw across all of these different studies.
Let's start to dive a little bit deeper then. Did students have higher achievement when they were put in the same classes or when they were sorted by ability?
Well, that depends on how you define achievement. Students' test scores were higher when classes were sorted by students' incoming skills, but their grades and pass rates were actually lower. People tend to think that grades and test scores go hand in hand, but it turns out that test scores and grades don't always follow the same patterns. Test scores reflect students' specific academic skills. Grades reflect students' ability to get their assignments done day after day, week after week. And it turns out that test scores and grades don't always follow the same patterns, and the effects of sorting are actually different for grades than for test scores.
Are the effects of sorting the same for high and low-skilled students?
No. Actually, high-skilled students and low-skilled students are affected in very different ways by sorting, by academic ability. Overall, test scores were higher when classes were sorted because of the benefits in test gains for high-skilled students. It turns out that students with strong academic skills are very sensitive to peer ability levels in terms of the gains that they make and how much they learn. So when a class becomes harder, they actually recognize the increased challenge and they end up learning more. Low-skill students' gains are actually less strongly affected by the skill levels of their classroom peers. So while students tend to learn more with higher-achieving peers, the benefits to low-achieving students are actually less. And it's probably because for low-achieving students, the class is going to be hard regardless. So making it even harder doesn't necessarily make it better for them, and in fact, it may bring it out of their skill range. On the other hand, grades and pass rates actually ended up being lower for high-skilled students when classes were sorted. And this is really counterintuitive for people because high-skilled students, they actually learned more, their test scores increased, but they became more likely to fail once algebra classes were sorted. And there are many reasons for this. One reason is because the classes became harder, but also a lot of students who were kind of average suddenly became the lowest skilled students in their classes. So the class became much harder for them, and it's very frustrating being the lowest ability student in your class. This is true for students of all skill levels. If everyone else has higher skills, you get frustrated because everyone else is moving on. The teacher seems like they're not helping you enough. You end up feeling badly about yourself. And so it can really affect your ability to succeed in the class. And as a result of the sorting, we actually end up seeing higher fail rates for students with above average skills after the double dose policy induced sorting. Now, for students with low skills, they actually became less likely to fail and their grades increased, partly because they learned more math under the policy, and I can talk about why that happened, but also because they were less likely to be at the bottom of their class once the classes were sorted.
What happened to high-skilled and low-skilled students under College Prep for All?
So we looked at the Algebra for All policy, which successfully expanded algebra to low-achieving students who used to take remedial math. And this policy, it also created more mixed-ability classrooms. So for low-achieving students, the policy raised the ability levels of their classroom peers. But when we looked at their math scores, the policy didn't improve their scores. And not only that, their failure rates also increased. And it's likely because students are more likely to fail in algebra than remedial math. So the overall failure rates were higher for low-achieving students after the policy. Then we then looked at high-achieving students. So these students, they always took algebra regardless of the policy, but the policy led an influx of low-achieving peers to their classrooms. So the overall class and peer ability levels declined for high-achieving kids. And we found that their test scores were hurt by the policy.
Can you talk more about the significance of students in sorted classes posting higher test scores but lower grades and pass rates?
You know, a lot of times people focus on test scores as the most important educational outcome, but it actually turns out that grades are more important for students' educational attainment than their test scores. I mean, students have to pass their classes to get the credits in order to graduate, and it turns out that it's really only students with a B average or better in high school that have at least a 50-50 shot of graduating from college. You know, grades represent, you know, so much more than just academic skills. They represent, you know, all of the non-cognitive factors and the ability to leverage those academic skills to actually get work done. So if you have a policy that results in higher test scores at the expense of students' grades and pass rates, you actually end up lowering students' likelihood of graduating from either high school or college. And I'm going to give you a pretty shocking example. The double dose policy ended up sorting students, right, you know, based on whether their test scores were just above or just below the 50th national percentile. In the end, students whose test scores were just above the 50th percentile ended up less likely to graduate high school and go to college than students with test scores just below the 50th percentile who ended up in the double dose classes. Those students in the double dose classes ended up more likely to pass their algebra class and get higher grades than the students with test scores that were slightly higher in the single period classes who ended up more likely to fail and get lower grades as a result of the policy.
Is that because students below the national median learn more algebra in the double dose class, or because the students above the national median were more likely to fail once they were low skilled compared to their classroom peers?
We don't know the answer to that yet. We still have to do some more research. One thing we do know is that students' ninth grade year sets the stage for how they do for the rest of high school. And we think that's partly because students' mindsets about who they are as learners really drive their perseverance in their classes. So a failure in ninth grade can affect how students see themselves as a learner and their likelihood to succeed in other classes. If they feel like they can't succeed, they have low self-efficacy, they're less likely to put in more effort in other classes when other classes get hard. On the other hand, if they feel successful and they know that they can succeed, they're more likely to try when things get hard later. So it could be that, you know, the success for those students just below the national median really helped them see themselves in a positive light and really put in more effort subsequently in high school. And they also did have stronger math skills as a result of the two periods of instruction. For the students above the national median, that failure or those low grades that they received in their math class might have changed the way they see themselves in terms of their ability to handle math and could have had subsequent consequences for later math and even science classes.
Let's shift gears a bit now to teacher preparation and classroom management. What kind of supports did teachers receive under each of the policies?
Under the College Prep for All policy, unfortunately, there was no specific support provided to teachers. So in other words, the policy simply eliminated remedial coursework and expanded academic coursework primarily to low-achieving students. But the district soon realized that they needed to increase support levels for struggling students and their teachers. So under the double-dose policy, the district provided professional development specifically around instruction, which we found did promote student-centered pedagogy. The district also provided specific curricular options with standalone lesson plans, and they encouraged schools to organize classes so that instruction would be coherent between the main algebra class and the support classes.
Did you find any effects of students with behavioral problems being concentrated in classes with low-skilled students?
Yes, and this is a problem with sorting classes by ability level. It means that their students with high absenteeism and disciplinary problems tend to be concentrated in the classes that are serving students with the weakest academic skills. So it puts much more demand on teachers in those classes to be really strong around engaging students and maintaining classroom control. Now, under the double-dose algebra policy, the fact that the classes were double periods actually made it easier for teachers because disruption wouldn't necessarily take over as long, you know, as much of the class time, and they were also able to do much more student-centered learning activities because they had more time. It gave them much more flexibility. They still struggled with disciplinary problems. It just made it less of a problem.
So what are the implications for practitioners?
In the end, neither sorting by ability or mixing students by ability is clearly preferential for any group of students, either high achieving or low achieving. However, whether schools decide to sort or not to sort will affect the kinds of supports that students are going to need and that teachers are going to need to maximize everyone's achievement. So if schools decide not to sort students by ability, then teachers need to have really strong skills and strategies around individualizing instruction and really timely, sensitive mechanisms for monitoring students' comprehension and engagement to make sure students aren't frustrated or aren't bored. When we look at successful examples of DTRAC schools, those tend to be well-resourced schools that have very specific characteristics, a shared belief among staff, successful professional development around inclusive pedagogy, and additional supports for struggling students. In contrast, schools that try to DTRAC without any supports for low-achieving students and for their teachers tend to show negative effects of DTRACing. On the other hand, if schools decide to sort students by ability, while there's less of a demand for teachers to individualize instruction and really closely monitor students, the schools need to pay really particular attention to the quality of instruction in low-skilled classrooms, where teachers are going to need really strong skills for maintaining classroom control and for engaging students in challenging tasks. You know, they might want to think about ways to structure the low-skilled classrooms in ways that make it easier for teachers to have, you know, strong classroom control and personalized instruction for students. You might think about smaller class sizes, more coordination with support staff, more time for instruction, like with the double-dose algebra policy. Regardless of whether schools sort or don't sort, they also need to really pay attention to students' ability level relative to their classroom peers. As we saw with the double-dose policy, students can actually have high or average achievement, you know, good tested skills, but actually be at risk of failure if their classroom peers have higher abilities than they do. So, you know, schools now have data systems that could allow them to really identify students who are at high risk based on who else is in their class with them. And again, they really need to anticipate behavioral problems in classrooms with many low-skill students.
A complicated situation and a complicated couple of policies with a lot of questions that we need to take a look at. Thank you all for joining us. I'm Jessica Puller, and this has been Ed Research Matters, the University of Chicago Consortium on Chicago School Research's exclusive podcast series.